Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Strong et al. Kidney Outcomes in Children Receiving Extracorporeal Membrane Oxygenation, a single-center acute cohort from 2009 to 2019, followed to 2021. Objectives. Long-term kidney outcomes after extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, are little quantified and understood. We aim to describe the frequency of kidney dysfunction screening during follow-up and the prevalence of long-term kidney disease. Design. Retrospective cohort of pediatric ECMO patients with estimated glomerular filtration rate, or eGFR, measured in milliliters per minute per 1.73 meters squared, using post-discharge serum creatinine values to define three kidney outcomes. 1. Acute kidney injury with eGFR of less than 60, which subsequently improved to normal greater than or equal to 90. 2. Abnormal eGFR of less than 90 at last follow-up. And 3. Chronic kidney disease with eGFR of less than 90 on at least two occasions separated by greater than or equal to 90 days without an intervening or subsequently normal eGFR. Setting, single-center tertiary care children's hospital system. Patients, all pediatric patients surviving ECMO from 2009 to 2019. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. In the 10-year cohort of 666 patients, 399 or 60% survived at least 3 months post-discharge. Of these, 382 of 399 or 96% were followed at our institution for a median of 5 years with an interquartile range of 3 to 8 years. 264 of 382 or 69% had at least one creatinine value post-discharge, and 209 of 382 or 55% had at least two values 3 months apart. Of the 264 with at least one creatinine value, 61 or 23% had an abnormal eGFR. Of the 209 with at least two values greater than or equal to 90 days apart, 18 or 9% met criteria for chronic kidney disease. Of those with chronic kidney disease, 12 of 18 had AKI during ECMO, and 7 of 18 had AKI events post-discharge with a range of 1 to 6 episodes. Conclusions. This 2009 to 2019 pediatric ECMO cohort of survivors followed for a median of 5 years shows the subsequent high burden of kidney disease. We found that monitoring and following kidney function was not complete in this population, which is a concern since the rate of later AKI events and chronic kidney disease is significant. Further study is needed to mitigate this post-ECMO vulnerability. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Flaherty et al. Patterns of use of beta-2 agonists, steroids, and mucoactive medications to treat bronchiolitis in the PICU. U.S. Pediatric Health Information System 2009 to 2022 database study. Objectives. Describe the use of beta-2 agonists, steroids, hypertonic saline, N-acetylcysteine, and Dornase alpha to treat bronchiolitis, factors associated with use, and associations between use and PICU length of stay. Design. Retrospective multicenter cohort study. Setting, PICUs in the Pediatric Health Information System database. Patients, PICU admitted children 24 months young or younger with bronchiolitis. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We analyzed 47,520 hospitalizations between July 1, 2018 and June 30, 2022. We calculated the rate of medication use overall and the median rate for each hospital. Beta-2 agonist use occurred in 24,984 of 47,520, or 52.6%, with a median hospital rate of 51.7% and a range of 21.4% to 81.7%. Steroid use occurred in 15,878 of 47,520, or 33.4%, with a median hospital rate of 33.4% and a range of 6% to 54.8%. Hypertonic saline use occurred in 7,041 of 47,520, or 14.8%, with a median hospital rate of 10.5% and a range of 0 to 66.1%. N-acetylcysteine use occurred in 1,571 of 47,520, or 3.3%, with a median hospital rate of 0.8% and a range of 0 to 22%. Andornase alpha use occurred in 840 of 47,520, or 1.8%, with a median hospital rate of 1.4% and a range of 0 to 13.6%. Logistic regression using generalized estimating equations identified associations between concurrent asthma and beta-2 agonist and steroid use. The beta-2 agonist suggested odds ratio was 8.68, with a 95% confidence interval of 7.08 to 10.65 and a p-value less than 0.001. The steroid adjusted odds ratio was 10.1 with a 95% confidence interval of 8.84 to 11.53 and a p-value less than 0.001. Mechanical ventilation was associated with all medications. Beta-2 agonists had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.79, a 95% confidence interval of 1.57 to 2.04, and a p-value less than 0.001. Steroids had an adjusted odds ratio of 2.33 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.69 to 3.21 and a p-value less than 0.001. Hypertonic saline had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.82, a 95% confidence interval of 1.47 to 2.25 and a p-value less than 0.001. N-acetylcysteine had an adjusted odds ratio of 3.29 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.15 to 5.03 and a p-value less than 0.001. Andornase alpha had an adjusted odds ratio of 7.65 with a 95% confidence interval of 4.3 to 13.61 and a p-value less than 0.001. No medication use was associated with decreased PICU length of stay. To assess changes in medication use over time and associations with the 2014 American Academy of Pediatrics Bronchiolitis Guidelines, we expanded our analysis to 83,820 hospitalizations between July 1, 2009 and June 30, 2022. Logistic regression with generalized estimating equations found no change in beta-2 agonist use. Steroid use increased after guideline publication with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.05, a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.1, and a p-value equal to 0.02. Hypertonic saline use changed from increasing prior to the guidelines with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.32, a 95% confidence interval of 1.11 to 1.56, and a p-value equal to 0.001. to stable since guideline publication, with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.93, a 95% confidence interval of 0.8 to 1.07, and a p-value equal to 0.33. Conclusions. Beta-2 agonists, steroids, and hypertonic saline are commonly but variably used for PICU bronchiolitis treatment. Medication use appears relatively stable over the last decade. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Schultz et al. Hospital-acquired complications in critically ill children and PICU length of stay, duration of respiratory support, and economics. Propensity score matching in a single-center cohort from 2015 to 2020. Objectives. To identify the health and economic costs of hospital-acquired complications in children who require PICU admission. Design. Propensity score matched cohort study analyzing routinely collected medical and costing data collected by the health service over 6 years from 2015 to 2020. Setting. Tertiary referral PICU in Queensland, Australia. Patients included all children admitted to the PICU. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We assessed ventilator and respiratory support free days at 30 days post PICU admission, length of PICU stay, prevalence of individual hospital-acquired complications, and attributable healthcare costs. A total of 8,437 admissions representing 6,054 unique patients were included in the analysis. Median for cohort age was 2.1 years with an interquartile range of 0.4 to 7.7 years, and 56% were male. Healthcare-associated infections contributed the largest proportion of hospital-acquired complications, with an incidence rate per 100 bed days of 46.5 and a 95% confidence interval of 29.5 to 47.9. In the propensity score matched analyses with a total of 3,852, including 1,306 hospital-acquired complications and 1,371 without hospital-acquired complications, hospital-acquired complication events were associated with reduced ventilator and respiratory support free days and increased PICU length of stay. The adjusted subhazard ratio for reduced ventilator days was 0.88 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.82 to 0.94 and the adjusted subhazard ratio for respiratory support free days was 0.74 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.69 to 0.79. The adjusted subhazard ratio for increased PICU length of stay was 0.63 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.58 to 0.68. Healthcare costs for children who developed a hospital-acquired complication were higher compared with children with no hospital-acquired complications, with mean additional costs ranging from Australian dollar of 77,825 to 310,877. One hospital-acquired complication had a 95% confidence interval of $57,501 to $98,150. And greater than or equal to four hospital-acquired complications had a 95% confidence interval of $214,572 to $407,181. In 2022, the average conversion of Australian dollars to U.S. dollars was 0.74. Conclusions. In our PICU from 2015 to 2020, the burden of hospital-acquired complications for critically ill children was highest for healthcare-associated infections. Further high-quality evidence regarding hospital-acquired complications prevention and prospective risk assessment could lead to improved patient outcomes and reduced costs. Abstract 4 is a featured original research article by Drop et al. Hemostatic outcome definitions in pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, challenges in cohorts from Rotterdam from 2019 to 2023 and Melbourne from 2016 to 2022. Objectives. To determine if a priori standardization of outcome hemostatic definitions alone was adequate to enable useful comparison between two cohorts of pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, patients managed according to local practice and protocol. Design. Comparison of two separate prospective cohort studies performed at different centers with standardized outcome definitions agreed upon a priori. Setting. General and cardiac PICUs at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, Australia, and the Sophia Children's Hospital in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. Patients included children 0 to 18 years old undergoing ECMO. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Although outcome definitions were standardized a priori, the interpretation of surgical interventions varied. The Sophia Children's Hospital study included 47 ECMO runs from September 2019 to April 2023, and the Royal Children's Hospital study included 97 ECMO runs from September 2016 to January 2022. Significant differences in patient populations were noted. Royal Children's Hospital patients biased toward frequent cardiac ECMO indications, central cannulation, and cardiopulmonary bypass before ECMO. The frequency of outcome ascertainment was not standardized. Conclusions. This international comparison shows that standardizing hemostatic outcome definitions alone is insufficient for sensible comparison. Uniform interpretation of definitions, consistent frequency of outcome ascertainment, and stratification based on patient populations and ECMO practices are required. Our results highlight the granularity of detail needed for cross-center comparison of hemostatic outcomes in pediatric ECMO. Further work is needed as we move toward potential multicenter trials of pediatric ECMO. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Maddox et al. Physical activity monitoring in children in the 1 year after 3 or more days of invasive ventilation. Feasibility of using accelerometers. Objectives. To measure physical activity in a cohort of children who survived greater than or equal to 3 days of invasive ventilation. Design. Prospective cohort study from 2018 to 2021. Setting. Quaternary Children's Hospital PICU. Patients included children 2 to 17 years old without a pre-existing tracheostomy who were ambulatory pre-illness and received greater than or equal to 3 days of invasive ventilation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We measured duration and intensity of physical activity using hip in less than 6 years old or wrist in greater than or equal to 6 years old worn Actigraph GT3XP BTLE accelerometers for 7 days at 3 time points, hospital discharge, 3 months, and 12 months post-discharge. We measured duration of moderate or vigorous physical activity and non-sedentary activity, both characterized as percent of total awake wear time and total minutes per day. We categorized participants based on when they first attained a high activity day defined as greater than or equal to 60 minutes of moderate or vigorous physical activity, or a day with a percent of moderate or vigorous physical activity in the top quartile of all days measured. We evaluated 55 children, of whom 43 or 78% had data from greater than or equal to one time point, including 19 or 35% with data from all time points. Maximum daily moderate to vigorous physical activity increased across the three post-discharge time points. Hospital discharge had a median of 16 minutes with an interquartile range of 8 to 42.8 minutes. 3 months post-discharge had a median of 48.3 minutes with an interquartile range of 27.8 to 94.3 minutes, and 12 months post-discharge had a median of 68.4 minutes with an interquartile range of 34.7 to 111 minutes. Maximum daily percent of awake wear time and moderate to vigorous physical activity also increased across the three post-discharge time points. The median at hospital discharge was 4.3% with an interquartile range of 2.8 to 9%. Median at 3 months post-discharge was 10.1% with an interquartile range of 5.7 to 14.4%. And the median at 12 months post-discharge was 11.1% with an interquartile range of 7.1 to 17.5% respectively. Of the 43 participants, 27 achieved a high activity day, 9 of 43 during the hospital discharge period, 14 of 43 during the 3 months post-discharge period, and 4 of 43 during the 12 months post-discharge period. 16 of 43 did not demonstrate high activity during the post-discharge year. Conclusions. In the 1 year after PICU discharge, measuring physical activity with accelerometers in children 2 to 17 years old is feasible. Furthermore, demonstration of variable recovery trajectories in our pilot cohort suggests it has potential to be an outcome measure in clinical trials. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Pascal et al. Early continuous electroencephalography, clinical parameters, and short-term functional outcomes in pediatric traumatic brain injury, single-center retrospective cohort study from 2010 to 2020. Objectives. Traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is a leading cause of pediatric morbidity and mortality. This study first investigates clinical characteristics in continuous electroencephalography, or CEEG, parameters associated with short-term functional outcomes in pediatric patients following TBI. Second, we use these data for a hypothesis-generating model about outcomes. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, PICU within a quaternary care hospital. Patients included pediatric patients less than 18 years old, admitted from January 2010 to December 2020 with TBI, who underwent CEEG within 72 hours of admission. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Patient demographics, clinical parameters, hospital course, and continuous EEG features were reviewed for associations with mortality and new disability, as defined by change in functional status score between admission and discharge of greater than or equal to 3 points. A statistical prediction model for patient outcomes was created combining continuous EEG parameters with admission Glasgow Coma Scale, or GCS, score and radiographic findings. We included 142 patients, 100 or 70% of whom had no new disability at hospital discharge, 42 or 30% had a new disability, including 8 deaths. Univariate analysis showed favorable outcomes were associated with normal electroencephalogram background, reactivity, and sleep features, with a p-value less than 0.001 for each. A model inclusive of these electroencephalogram parameters and GCS had high predictive ability for outcome with 0.94, with 95% confidence interval 0.9 to 0.98. Conclusions. Specific continuous EEG findings observed acutely after injury in combination with other clinical characteristics may serve as biomarkers for short-term functional outcomes after pediatric TBI. Further validation of the model in another population is now required. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Gockenauer et al. Adolescents and Young Adults with Respiratory Failure in U.S. PICUs, a Pediatric Health Information System Database Study from 2011 to 2022. Objectives. To examine the clinical characteristics, outcomes, and resource use of adolescents and young adults admitted to PICUs in the United States with respiratory failure. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, de-identify data from 48 U.S. Children's Hospitals contributing to the Pediatric Health Information System, or FHIS, database. Patients, all patients older than 30 days old with respiratory failure defined as encounters with clinical transaction codes for non-invasive or invasive mechanical ventilation admitted to FHIS database PICUs from January 2011 to December 2022. Patients were categorized into 5 cohorts, less than 15, 15 to 18, 19 to 21, 22 to 25, and greater than 25 years old. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 430,238 patients were identified. Adolescents and young adults greater than or equal to 15 years old accounted for 15% or 65,740 of all PICU admissions with respiratory failure. 49% or 32,232 of 65,740 of adolescents and young adults older than 25 years had medical technology dependence compared with 39% in those younger than 15 years with a p-value less than 0.001. 61% of adolescents and young adults older than 25 years had a cardiovascular comorbidity compared with 35% of those younger than 15 years with a p-value less than 0.001. 40% of adolescents and young adults older than 25 years had a neurologic comorbidity and 27% a gastrointestinal comorbidity compared with 27% and 31% respectively in those younger than 15 years, all with p-values less than 0.001. Compared with those younger than 15 years, adolescents and young adults' median hospital crude mortality rate was higher at 7.7% compared with 5.2%, as were median hospital charges per encounter at $163,000 with an interquartile range of $77,000 to $350,000 versus $121,000 with an interquartile range of $53,000 to $278,000. All had p-values less than 0.001. Median ventilator days and hospital length of stay in survivors were similar for all age cohorts. Conclusions. Adolescents and young adults represent a substantial proportion of patients admitted to the PICU with respiratory failure. These individuals have unique comorbidities and are at risk for increased mortality and resource utilization compared with younger patients during hospitalization. Medical complexity and sequela of pediatric illness may delay the transition of adolescents and young adults to adult care, necessitating collaboration between adult and pediatric critical care physicians to increase research across the age spectrum and develop and implement appropriate evidence-based guidelines. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Sakdev et al., Transpulmonary Pressure-Guided Mechanical Ventilation in Severe Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome in the PICU, Single-Center Retrospective Study in North India from 2018 to 2021. Objectives. In this study, we have reviewed the association between esophageal pressure-guided positive end expiratory pressure, or PEEP, setting and oxygenation and lung mechanics with a conventional mechanical ventilation strategy in patients with moderate to severe pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or pediatric ARDS. Design. Retrospective cohort from 2018 to 2021. Setting. Tertiary PICU. Patients, moderate to severe pediatric ARDS patients who required mechanical ventilation with PEEP of greater than or equal to 8 centimeters of water. Interventions, esophageal pressure, IDS transpulmonary pressure guided mechanical ventilation versus not. Measurements and main results. We identified 26 pediatric ARDS cases who were divided into those who had been managed with transpulmonary pressure guided mechanical ventilation, or the transpulmonary pressure group, and those managed with conventional ventilation strategy, or the non-transpulmonary pressure group. Oxygenation and lung mechanics were compared between groups at baseline or 0 hours and 24, 48, and 72 hours of mechanical ventilation. There were 13 patients in each group in the first 24 hours. At 48 and 72 hours, there were 11 in the transpulmonary pressure group and 12 in the non-transpulmonary pressure group. On comparing these groups, first, use of transpulmonary pressure monitoring was associated with higher median mean airway pressure at 24 hours, 18 hours with an interquartile range of 18 to 20 hours, versus 15 hours with an interquartile range of 13 to 18 hours and a p-value equal to 0.01, and at 48 hours, 19 hours with an interquartile range of 17 to 19 hours, versus 15 hours with an interquartile range of 13 to 17 hours and a p-value equal to 0.01. Third, use of transpulmonary pressure was associated with lower FiO2 and greater PaO2 to FiO2 ratio at 72 hours. Last, there were 18 of 26 survivors, and we failed to identify an association between use of transpulmonary pressure monitoring and survival. Conclusions. In this cohort of moderate to severe pediatric ARDS cases undergoing mechanical ventilation with PEEP greater than or equal to 8 centimeters of water, we have identified some favorable associations of oxygenation status when transpulmonary pressure guided mechanical ventilation was used versus not. Larger studies are required. Abstract 9 is a clinical investigation article by Kim et al. Extubation Failure in the PICU, a Virtual Pediatric Systems Database Study from 2017 to 2021. Objectives. Extubation failure in PICU patients is reintubation within 48, 72, or 96 hours of planned extubation, also known as EF48, EF72, and EF96, respectively. Standardized sedation protocols, extubation readiness testing, and non-invasive respiratory support are used to improve efficient liberation from mechanical ventilation. We therefore aim to review extubation failure rates, time to failure, and the use of non-invasive respiratory support after extubation from 2017 to 2021. Design. Retrospective analysis of patients admitted to PICUs contributing to the Virtual Pediatric Systems or VPS database from 2017 to 2021. Setting. 136 participating PICUs. Patients included all patients admitted to participating PICUs between January 1, 2017 and December 31, 2021 who had mechanical ventilation and met inclusion criteria for planned extubation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. There were 111,229 planned extubations with 5,143 reintubations within 48 hours. The EF48, EF72, and EF96 rates were 4.6%, 5.3%, and 5.8%, respectively. Higher rates of extubation failure were associated with age younger than 6 months, underlying genetic conditions, medical comorbidities, or cardiac surgery. Failed extubation was also associated with higher pediatric risk of mortality 3 scores, longer duration of mechanical ventilation, and longer PICU and hospital lengths of stay. From 2017 to 2021, there was an increase in the use of high-flow nasal cannula oxygen therapy after extubation from 16.6% to 20.2%. Conclusions. In the VPS 2017 to 2021 dataset, we have found that the overall extubation failure rates, including EF48 to EF96, have improved over this 5-year period. We are not able to assess the clinical benefit of this change, but it is evident that over the same period, there has been a concomitant increase in the use of post-extubation non-invasive respiratory support. Further work is needed to look at the interaction of these effects in contemporary PICU practice. Abstract 10 is a PCCM trial by Rahman et al. Resuscitation in pediatric septic shock using vitamin C and hydrocortisone, or RESPOND, the RESPOND randomized control trial protocol. Objectives. Pediatric sepsis results in significant morbidity and mortality worldwide. There is an urgent need to investigate adjunctive therapies that can be administered early. We hypothesize that using vitamin C combined with hydrocortisone increases survival free of inotropes and vasopressor support until day 7 compared with standard care. Here we describe the resuscitation in pediatric septic shock using vitamin C and hydrocortisone or RESPOND trial protocol, which aims to address this hypothesis. Design, randomized open-label controlled parallel group 3-arm trial with integrated economic evaluation. Setting, 9 Australia and New Zealand PICUs with interest from additional international sites. Patients, children between 7 days and younger than 18 years old who are treated for suspected or confirmed sepsis and receiving inotropes and or vasopressors for greater than 1 hour. Interventions, IV vitamin C 100 mg per kilogram with a maximum of 5 grams every 6 hours and hydrocortisone 1 mg per kilogram with a maximum of 50 mg every 6 hours or IV hydrocortisone alone 1 mg per kilogram with a maximum of 50 mg every 6 hours or standard care. Measurements and main results. 384 children will be randomly assigned to receive the interventions or standard care in a 1:1:1 ratio with stratification by steroid administration pre-randomization and hospital site. The primary outcome is time alive and free of inotropes and/or vasopressors censored at 7 days. Secondary outcomes include 28-day mortality, survival free of organ support, PICU length of stay, quality of life, functional status, and neurodevelopment vulnerability at 6 months post-enrollment, and hospitalization-related costs. Statistical analysis will be based on an intention-to-treat principle. The study has ethical approval, is registered in the Australian-New Zealand Clinical Trials Registry, commenced recruitment on December 8, 2021, and is expected to finish recruitment by mid-2026. Conclusions. Dissemination of the results will occur through publication in peer-reviewed journals, presentations at international conferences, and additional consumer-informed pathways. Abstract 11 is a PCCM conference report and expert panel by Loberger et al. planning a phased guideline implementation strategy across the Multicenter Ventilation Liberation for Kids, or VentLib for Kids Collaborative. Objectives: to evaluate contextual factors relevant to implementing pediatric ventilator liberation guidelines and to develop an implementation strategy for a multicenter collaborative. Design: cross-sectional qualitative analysis of a 2023-2024 survey. Setting: International Multicenter Ventilation Liberation for Kids, or VentLib for Kids Collaborative. Subjects: physicians, advanced practice providers, respiratory therapists, and nurses. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The survey was distributed to 26 PICUs representing 18 unique centers, 17 in North America, including 14 general medical, surgical, 8 cardiac, and 4 mixed, with 1,935 solicitations. All 409 responses were analyzed. Prescribers were 39.8%, nurses were 32.8%, and respiratory therapists were 27.4%. Three implementation tiers were identified based on perceptions of evidence, feasibility, positive impact, and favorability constructs. Tier A, which included greater than or equal to 80% agreement for all constructs, included extubation readiness testing screening, extubation readiness testing bundle, spontaneous breathing trials, upper airway obstruction risk mitigation, and risk stratified non-invasive respiratory support. Tier B, which included 50 to 79% agreement, included standard risk spontaneous breathing trial method, risk stratified spontaneous breathing trial duration, and upper airway obstruction risk assessment. Tier C, which was less than 50% agreement, included high risk spontaneous breathing trial method, respiratory muscle strength testing, and infant non-invasive respiratory support. The smallest perceived practice gaps were noted in Tier A and the largest in Tier C. The smallest practice gap was risk-stratified non-invasive respiratory support, with 88% agreement. The largest practice gap was respiratory muscle strength, with 18% agreement. In regression analysis, independently significant differences in perceptions based on role and unit type for multiple constructs were identified for upper airway obstruction risk assessment, upper airway obstruction risk mitigation, risk-stratified non-invasive respiratory support, and infant non-invasive respiratory support. Conclusions. This survey study of the VentLib for Kids Collaborative lays the foundation for phased implementation of the 2023 Pediatric Ventilator Liberation Guidelines. Early phases should focus on the best implementation profiles and smallest practice gaps. Later phases should address those that are more challenging. Unit and role-based tailoring of differences should be considered for some recommendations more than others. This concludes the abstracts for the March 2025 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.